A cold one masks the abstract. Step back and feel the contrast. Echoes of a broken past. Before my eyes, the future flashed. Concepts, the moment past. Fear of the manifest. Waging battle on my spirit. Surrender to what's fearless. See what bodies mix of love and lust. When love was hard to touch, I toss a prayer your way. Namaste, baby, namaste.
Namaste, namaste.
Welcome to Yoga Talk, the Yoga International podcast. I'm your host, Kat Hegberg. I'm the editor of Yoga International.
And I'm Michael Carlucci. I'm one of the content developers of Yoga International.
I'm Catherine Ashworth. I'm an assistant producer at Yoga International.
Kat and Kat. Oh my God, we're making a podcast about yoga for the internet with two cats. That's like internet cats.
We are internet cats.
Oh my God, clickbait.
Well, speaking of internet cats, have you guys actually seen that video of that guy doing sun salutes with his cat?
Sun salutes with a cat?
Uh-huh.
Oh my goodness.
There, it's like he goes into Warrior One and calls it like Purrier One.
Oh,
and there's like reverse
that's
Purrier.
That's precious.
And he like places the cat down and the cat seems to be... We will, even though it has nothing to do with our topic today, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Oh my God, cat's doing sun
but
salutes.
But our topic today is related to small adorable mammals practicing yoga because we're talking about kids in yoga today.
Kids in yoga. We love the bebes doing yoga.
Well, maybe not babies, but like ages 3 to teenager. Those are typically what we talk about when we talk about kids yoga. And we're going to talk about how we might go about teaching yoga to kids, how you could get to be trained as a kids yoga teacher, how it's different than teaching adults, some of the benefits that kids can get from yoga, and also some of the controversies. There's even some controversy about teaching kids yoga. So have either of you guys taught kids yoga?
Yeah, Kat. As you know, I used to be a ballet dancer, and one summer in order to pay for some of my ballet training, my fix of ballet and movement, I was asked to teach at an acting workshop that the ballet studio was offering. And I said, well, I'll just teach yoga. And my great teacher, Natalia, was like,
I had a lot of ballet teachers named Natalia,
isn't it a great
too.
Name?
That
it's
must a, be like a ballet teacher
it's
name.
It's a perfect name for a ballet teacher, Natalia. Yeah. So Natalia is like, she spoke with this South African accent. She's like, well, will you teach yoga for some of the kids? And I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. And so I learned a lot about myself, actually, because these kids were like, probably not seven, more like 8 to 10, something like that. And they were not having any of the classical tradition of yoga as laid out in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Imagine that.
I mean, like, you know, I'm like, bring your attention to your drishti, feel the illumination in the Jyotishmati and the Pranadharana.
Oh, and, those 4 8-year-olds.
Yeah, no, they weren't into it. So they were having their way with me. And it taught me a lot about myself. I had to modulate kind of like in the moment to give them something that was both good for them, but also that would keep their attention. And it ended up being a lot of playing with the poses.
Oh, sure,
and then
yeah.
We ended up doing a lot of singing, like piano, seven hands and stuff like that, which was, because it was in a ballet studio, so we had a piano. So that was kind of fun. But that was my first experience with yoga and kids. And I still think about those kids and that experience.
Yeah, my actual first experience teaching yoga to kids was similar in that I had been teaching ballet at a community center, and the community center head heard that I was teaching yoga to adults and said, hey, do you want to teach a kids class? And I said, sure. You know, I teach yoga. I teach kids. I can teach yoga to kids. Well, it turns out that it was a lot more complicated than I thought, because teaching yoga to kids is very different than teaching yoga to adults. Probably the biggest lesson that I learned was when they asked me, what age group do you want to teach? I said, oh, 3 to 13. That's a really big age group.
Yeah, that's a big margin.
Yeah, what a 3-year-old needs from a yoga class or is, you know, capable of in a yoga class, very different from a 13-year-old. But that was definitely an interesting lesson. And I actually wrote an article about that on Yoga International that we will link to in the show notes as well.
Great.
That experience, yeah.
Well, Kat, I've never taught kids yoga, but I'm really passionate about it, so I'm really happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here, too. And Catherine, you've written some articles about kids yoga for YI, too. And we will also talk about some of those a little later and link to them in the show notes.
Definitely.
So how do you get to be a kids yoga teacher? well, you might just think, you know, like, well, I teach yoga to adults. This is what I thought anyway. I'm going to go in and, you know, we'll do some cat-cow. I'll have them bark and meow, you know, sun salutes. It'll be
cat-cow,
good.
Cat-cow, bark and meow. That sounds like a workshop right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, you wouldn't bark and meow. You would moo and meow, and then you would bark and down dog, unless you have a barking cow. I don't quite know. That would be
barking
like,
cow?
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe, I would bark. That's a new pose right
yeah,
there.
Why not?
Barking cow pose. You could do that. But it was definitely, you know, once I walked into that classroom to teach kids, I was like, oh, I actually need to do something age appropriate here. And there are lots of teacher trainings that show you the ways that you can sequence for kids, you can theme for kids, yoga activities and games and stories and all these different ideas to incorporate into your lesson plans so that kids actually enjoy your class.
Are there any kind of credentialing? This is like, I mean, when I hear teacher trainings, I'm starting to think, as per our other podcast, Yoga Alliance.
Yeah, actually, Yoga Alliance has a specialty designation where you can, if you do a training through a registered children's yoga school, you can register as a registered children's yoga teacher. So that is a possibility. And again, there are lots of schools out there. I don't know if all of these schools are registered or not, but lots of schools out there that are really known for kid-friendly teacher trainings, including Calming Kids Yoga with Dee Marie.
Dee Marie, we love Dee Marie here at the HI.
Yeah, she actually came here a couple years ago and did her Calming Kids training, and I didn't get to take it because I was doing another training, but a lot of my friends took it and really enjoyed it.
Mm.
So Calming Kids, they've also done, I think she's done a bit of research with how yoga can help prevent bullying, which is really,
that's important.
A great benefit of that program.
So important, yeah.
Childlight Yoga is another one. Karma Kids, Yoga Kids, you might have heard of. Take Five. Catherine, you're really familiar with that one.
Definitely.
That's yoga in schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Yoga Ed is another yoga in schools program. So not only if you're an adult yoga teacher that wants to be a kid's yoga teacher, can you take these trainings? But if you're like an elementary school teacher, a preschool teacher, a high school teacher, there are trainings that are geared toward those people, too, to help them bring yoga into the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And Kripalu has a kids program. Yoga Fit has Yoga Fit Kids. So lots of options there if you're interested.
So, Kat, do you have any teaching tips you could offer us?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing, again, that occurred to me when I started teaching kids yoga was kids aren't many adults. They're different.
Yeah.
So you have to teach a kids class different than you teach an adults class. But how? When you create a lesson plan, I think the biggest thing is, you know, be ready to change it up. It's a good idea to have some structure, to have some stories, to have some games planned, but it might not always go as planned. You know, kids can be pretty unpredictable. We can all be unpredictable sometimes, but kids are a little bit more apt to show it, perhaps. Another tip that I learned, actually just about teaching kids in general, that I found maybe the most helpful is to avoid the incessant good jobbing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like whenever, you know, when I would teach kids, I'm like, I want to build up their self-esteem. I want, you know, to encourage them. So every other word out of my mouth would be, good job, good job, good job. But, you know, kids aren't stupid. And if that good job doesn't mean anything, then they're going to start to block it out or, you know, not really believe you when you tell them that they're doing a good job.
It's like we're trying to dopaminify their experience as per our preparation. And we do that by saying good job, you know, because it's like a reward almost. But in a sense, it's like, I know when it's said to me, I want somebody to really be present with me and to really see me. And sometimes I don't feel like when I'm in a big yoga class with like 20 people or 300 people that it's like they're really seeing me necessarily. So it doesn't necessarily motivate my behavior. It actually kind of makes me feel like a little bit of a lack of trust because I really want to be present with people.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't give kids positive feedback. It just means be specific and be honest with your positive feedback. Like, wow, you're Warrior Two. Looks really strong today, or you know, your front knee is pointing straight ahead, it's not dropping in like it was last week. Good job with that,
or your Upavishta Konasana is like the picture perfect form that could be in light on yoga.
Yes, or if we're talking about kids, wow, that dog bark and that was an excellent bark,
like I was transformed by your cow. I thought I was in the barnyard.
Yeah, I thought you were a cow.
Yeah. But be honest with it, that's the biggest thing. Actually, I read a great book several years ago. It was written by Elfie Kahn and it was called Unconditional Parenting. parenting. And I am not a parent, but I found the book really helpful and would recommend it for anybody that works with kids. And he addresses that, you know, that we can't just keep up with this good job, good job, good job, good job, every other word, because it's not really that helpful for kids in the long run. So as a yoga teacher, I found that to be really great feedback. And I think it would be useful, you know, for anybody that works with kids.
Hey, Kat, what do you think about giving kids alignment cues? I mean, like, is it, like, helpful at all to take, like, a group of, like, 10-year-olds and be like, I said externally rotate the hip? Like, I mean, schnell. It's like, what is that even a useful thing to do for children?
I don't really think that focusing too much on alignment is that helpful. I mean, of course you want to keep the kids safe. But if no one's front knee is at a perfect square in Warrior II, who cares? I mean, I would argue that who cares even with adults too. But I think with kids, the important thing is that they're safe and that they're having fun and they don't need to look like they're going to be on the cover of Yoga Journal. They just, you know, we want to give them an experience and make it enjoyable. And I think very few people, kids or adults, particularly enjoy being picked at. So
full transparency, dear listener, I could care less about alignment.
Michael's not a fan of alignment. I am a fan of alignment, but not so much on focusing on that for kids. I think you're neutral, aren't you, Catherine?
Yeah, I'm neutral. I see the value in it. And
Just to qualify, dear listener, I do recognize the importance of alignment, but I think that we overdo it in yoga class as a sort of a bypass, if you will, like an alignment bypass rather than getting to the deeper mysteries of yoga.
Yeah, like the dopaminification.
Yeah, like I'd rather dopaminify the internal koshas rather than the external koshas.
Dopaminify, TM Michael Carlucci.
You heard it first on Yoga International.
All right. So back to the kids. I think not focusing too much on alignment is wise. I do like to introduce a little bit of Sanskrit. I mean, of course, you know, I'm not going to just say Virabhadrasana 1, Virabhadrasana 2, you know, like over and over and not give any explanation. But I think it can be really empowering and fun to say, hey, this pose that we call butterfly in Sanskrit, it's actually called Baddha Konasana. And that means bound angle. Isn't that cool? Let's say that together. Baddha Konasana, or, you know, to talk about namaste and what that means. And I know that there are certain places, like in public schools, sometimes they say, hey, ease up on the Sanskrit. And that's fine if you can't do that. But if you can, I think, you know, it can be empowering to have a little language lesson.
Plus, Kat, I know how funny you are with the Sanskrit and how much you use it. Like when you teach kids, sometimes you say Ekapada Rajakaputasana because it has the diacritic mark there on the asana. So It's like you're really supposed to like extend that. And like, I know that you really love to geek out about that kind of stuff.
Oh, I do. I make a lot of mistakes, but I still have fun with it. And imagine, like, you're a little kid, you know, and you're in school or you go to your after-school yoga program and you learn Ekapada Rajakaputasana. I'm not using any diacritics there, just the term. But you learn that asana name and you come home and you're like, you know, mom, dad, grandma, you know, adults, like, guess what I learned in school today? And you can say that, like, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I will love that.
It's pretty cool for me, and I'm like 100 years old. I mean, like, I walk around the Institute talking about asana all the time and people laugh a little bit.
Yeah, but it's definitely, like, I mean, I think on the one hand, we don't want to pick at kids, but also we don't want to underestimate them either, you know? Like, empower them with that.
Empower them with the classical language.
Totally. So, Catherine, you sent me this really adorable video about teaching yoga to kids. It was on Yoga Dork, I think.
Yeah, I saw this really cool video on Yoga Dork with Lauren Chaitoff, and I'm not quite sure if I'm saying her name right. And it was really cute because she was teaching a little boy named Davis, who is 3 years old.
Three.
And the funny thing about Davis is he's been studying at Yogi Beans since he was 14 months
Yogi
old.
Yogi Beans? That's such a cute name. Can I just say, Yogi Beans people, I love your name.
I know, I do too. And my favorite part of the video was she was teaching him a meditation called Worry Cup Meditation, and she was teaching him to shake all of his worries out of his head.
Oh my God, I want to try that
hand,
practice, like, after,
you know,
we leave this podcast.
Of his hand.
What's it called? Worry
and
cup?
Rather than doing it, he just fell over. Yeah.
That is so, anyone who's ever taught kids yoga, you will know how completely accurate that
exactly.
is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love how she was like, oh, he's in Shavasana.
That's really cute.
I have a lot of worries I could shake into a cup.
Yeah.
I need a big cup. My cup runneth over with worries.
As does yours. Yes, as doth mine. But we will also link to that so you guys can see this adorable video, an example of what it actually looks like to teach yoga to kids. Yeah, and there's like, you know, when I first started teaching yoga to kids, which was maybe like around 10 years ago or so, 9, 8 years ago, I didn't feel like there was a ton of resources. Like, I mean, I had some books. There wasn't really even any teacher trainings then, but I had like my books and my flashcards. And a lot of what I did even came from just like elementary school teachers and gymnastics teachers, books and manuals, because that's what was there. But now there's so many great resources for teaching yoga to kids. There's like internet resources, teacher trainings, lots of collaboration. And there was even a conference recently, wasn't there, on teaching yoga to kids?
Yeah, there was the first ever National Kids Yoga Conference that was held in September of 2014. And basically it was to build momentum and to even actually talk about how yoga can be a secular practice because... As you know, there's been a little bit of controversy about that.
Yeah, there certainly has been. If you've been paying attention to the yoga news over the past year, you might have heard that some people aren't so happy about the idea of teaching yoga to kids, especially in Encinitas, California.
Oh, yeah, the lawsuit from Encinitas.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit in Encinitas, California that was filed against the Encinitas Union School District on behalf of Stephen and Jennifer Sedlak. I think Sedlak versus Baird was the name of the suit. And the concern was basically that yoga was a religious practice and to teach it in schools violated the separation of church and state because these were in public schools. And the ruling, though, was that yoga is not religious and therefore it's appropriate to teach children. And the reasoning behind this was that the yoga classes that were taught were stripped of spiritual reference. And I thought it was interesting that whenever I hear that, that they're speaking about that the practices were stripped of like the Sanskrit terminology. Because of course, Sanskrit is, you know, a liturgical language and the words are said to be sacred, but also just from an academic standpoint, I don't really see how saying that Baddha Konasana means bound angle is religion, personally. But, you know, I'm glad that we can teach, at least in Encinitas Union School District, that we can teach yoga to kids because I think it really is a beneficial practice.
Kat, I have to say, though, changing lotus pose to crisscross applesauce, can we really say that applesauce isn't sacred?
I mean, applesauce is like sacred to like me.
Yeah. Well, sacred to Johnny Appleseed.
Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah.
He was a very religious man.
He was a very religious man.
I mean, are we going to do lotus pose?
He was a Swedenborgian, I think, like a Swedenborgian missionary or something. I heard about that on one of my other favorite podcasts, Stuff You Missed in History Class. But Johnny Appleseed aside, I think that this was really interesting. And I actually, I was surprised how strongly I reacted to this idea, like what a visceral reaction I had as a yoga teacher and as someone who's taught yoga to kids, because I almost felt a little bit defensive. Like, well, my intention as a yoga teacher, I'm not even a religious person. Like, I don't want to change anyone's religion. I don't want to, you know, all I really want to do when I teach yoga to kids is help them chill out, like help them feel good about themselves and teach them healthy and fun and interesting ways to work with their bodies and to maybe help them find a sense of calm and peacefulness in the midst of their day. So religion or lack thereof isn't even really on my radar when that happens.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel you. It's a question again of ground, path, and fruition of yoga culture in this 21st century American culture, because some people don't even really know what yoga is. And I mean, God, I've been here for 3 years, and sometimes I'm confused.
Like, I know what yoga
you know?
Is.
I mean, like, is it spiritual? Is it religious? You know, like you have Krishna dancing around with the gopis, but then we talk about it not being a, you know, a religion or a spiritual. So it's like, we need more language and clarity around what yoga actually is and what it actually isn't.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like, what are you actually doing too? Like, what is in this moment? When I would go into preschools, you know, in the past, and I would teach yoga to preschoolers, and usually what we would do is we would do bunny breath, you know?
Bunny breath, Kat?
Like bunny breath. So
bunny
cute.
Breath?
I want to do bunny breath.
We would do bunny breath.
Kat, are you sure bunny breath is appropriate for kindergarten?
I think so.
Bunnies are sacred.
Bunny breath. And we would do elephant arm swings, or we would, you know, like all of these just like silly, fun activities. And anyone who observed any of that, like, I couldn't imagine how that could be seen as religious. Whereas, like, you know, it's almost like I remember, like, I went to public school my whole life. And, you know, in middle school, we would sometimes sing choral music. And a lot of the choral music we would sing was religious in nature. But we weren't, you know, our teacher wasn't teaching us that religion. We were learning music. And so because those songs culturally came from a time period and a place where the art was very Christian, religious in nature, that's what we sang and that's what we learned. And I guess I don't see how yoga is much different than that. If anything, I would think it would be a bigger deal to sing the Hallelujah chorus than to do, you know, bunny breath.
Well, it's also a question of, like, taking out under God, you know, from the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, there are people that might argue that that's religious. I mean, it sounds fairly religious to me. So it's like, our culture that we've built in this Republic of the United States with the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, it's like it's pretty clear about certain things. So that's the culture that we've made. Mm-hmm. And how do we adapt and be in that culture and bring other systems into that culture in a way that's not harmful?
Yeah, it's a very interesting conversation. And I was, again, surprised at how opinionated I felt about that. But
well, Kat, the thing I feel really opinionated about and passionate about is that, you know, there have been studies that have shown that meditation and mindfulness-based practices strengthen areas of the brain that have to do with the regulation of emotion. And I know the University of Siena recently conducted a study on this, which we're actually going to release soon in an article. So.
Nice.
Kat, are you suggesting that we should use science to maybe affect policy?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Hmm.
Not that there's a policy, but...
But, you know, I think that whether or not we have, you could be argued that we may or may not, I think we had this discussion earlier, have a social responsibility then to teach mindfulness and relaxation and, you know, techniques that will help kids and young adults to be able to better handle stress. But whether or not it is a social responsibility, I think it's a good idea.
Definitely.
Well, there is another study, actually, that came out recently, I think about a year ago. It was published in the Journal of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, and it found that yoga can help teenagers with anxiety, that yoga basically can help ward off anxiety in teenagers. And it was conducted by researchers from Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School with junior and senior high school students. And yoga was found to be advantageous. I know, actually, I wish I had had yoga in high school.
Me too.
I can't think of a time in my life where I had more anxiety than high school.
Yeah, high school is a...
Yeah. He's speechless.
I think the thing about being a teenager is like the whole idea of being seen. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, rather than just saying good job, say, you know, that's a strong knee and you're a warrior too.
Well, and it's non-competitive too. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in high school, I liked taking weight training class because I was pretty athletic, but I would always get, when it came to team sports and, you know, competitiveness, I would get really anxious. Like, oh, I don't want to let my team down. I don't want people to make fun of me. And I think that yoga would have been really great in that same way. My dad actually teaches high school, and he's taught at my old high school. And he was subbing for gym class one day. And he said to me, he's like, guess what? I taught a yoga class today. And I was like, Dad, you don't even do yoga. How could you teach yoga? And he explained to me that a friend of his was a gym teacher at this high school, and she was out, so he was teaching the class. And their normal gym teacher, I guess, was a registered yoga teacher. And so she had an option that those kids could take for gym class, so they could take yoga. And when he came and taught, I guess they did like DVDs or he had them make flashcards and teach each other. But I just thought, like, wow, I would have loved that so much. And that's so great that that's an option in more places.
Yeah, go Kat's dad. That's awesome.
Go my dad. There's also a lot of conversation happening about how, you know, in younger kids too, how yoga can be really advantageous. And there are programs that are being developed to help to encourage kids to maybe pause and stop and think and breathe and do a little yoga and increase that mindfulness. And the hope is that this can be used to address, you know, issues like bullying, which are really big issues, always have been big issues. And Catherine, you did a lot of research and wrote an article about one particular program, Take Five, didn't you?
Yeah, I recently talked to Sheila Palmquist, the founder of Take Five. It's a yoga teacher training program to educate counselors, teachers, and yoga instructors on how to teach kids yoga, actually within the classroom, which is really cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And their mission is to, like you were just saying, to address and manage behavior issues that lead to childhood obesity, stress, self-abuse, bullying, and violent behaviors of all kinds. And
wow.
The coolest thing that I found about this program and what it's offering kids is that when they're feeling something, they can just put their hand up. I need to take five. I need to process what I'm feeling. And they're actually teaching other kids, you know, on lunch breaks, in the halls.
Imagine if we did that as adults.
Yeah.
Like, if instead of blowing up at each other, not that we blow up at each other very much.
All
but,
the
you know,
time.
Instead of getting angry or, you know, saying things we regret, just to say, like, hey, guys, I need to take five. I'm going to do my alternate nostril breathing. Be right back.
That is so good, you know, because basically what that's doing is it's engendering emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we know from the tradition that we're trying to create space in our various koshas, whether it's in the Anamaya kosha, we're creating space in an asana class.
That is the physical body, listener.
But we're also trying to create space in the other koshas too. And by saying, I'm going to take five, what are you saying? You're saying, I need time to process this jolt that's in my emotional body.
Yeah.
And that is like, that's amazing video right there.
And you know, our kids are stressed. I mean, she partnered with the University of Nebraska's psychology department in developing the program. And they offered them a stress assessment test, and they asked them questions like, do you often have negative thoughts or feelings about yourself? Do you have trouble making or keeping friends? Do you live in an unsafe home or environment? Has someone close to you died within the past year?
And these are questions for little kids?
Yeah, for middle schoolers. And scoring 15% would have indicated, according to their findings, mm-hmm. moderate stress levels, and many of the children scored as high as 80%.
80%?
Yeah.
Children, 80%. My God.
And I think we often think about kids as really carefree mammals, as you said.
Carefree little mammals, but they can be, that just being a child doesn't make you immune to stress.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
That's when the wheel of karma starts turning too, because, you know, you start building these habits, these habitual patterns, these samskaras at those. I know I certainly did, at least.
So it sounds like these programs have the potential to be really, really helpful for kids. I mean, I'm certainly encouraged by what's happening.
Yeah, I'm sold. How about you, Michael?
I'm very, very encouraged.
Yeah, so I think at least my verdict would be yoga for kids, a good thing. Like, we need more of it.
I think I'm going to make a t-shirt that says yoga for kids.
So what's the verdict? I mean, kids yoga, a good thing?
I think so.
I think
yoga is a good thing for everybody, of course.
I think that ultimately, at least my perception is that yoga is about love. And if we can teach kids to love themselves and love each other, where can you go wrong?
Yeah, we are in favor of teaching yoga to kids. And listener, if you teach yoga to kids or have questions or comments or anecdotes about teaching yoga to kids, or if you have show ideas, you can email those to yogatalk@yogainternational.com. We have some great episodes coming your way soon that are based on show ideas that you guys sent us. So we love receiving that feedback, and we will catch you next time. Here are the householders to take us out.
Kids that were breastfed, sheltered myself and the blessed kids. Given the world, don't you feel restless? Given the world, much is expected. Pain over practice, emotions, the atmosphere, life's roller coaster. Please, not gunshots, the guns, cock, drugs, and a block of 6 feet. Put the mind as a fun it means. Handsome or hard, what does it all mean? Asking these questions from the deep, off my seat, off my knees. Walking a tightrope, this life I wrote, tapped on my long ago. Now time is the filter that I gotta forgo. Now I'ma stay humbly though, facing the waves and the wind, echoing upon the lake within. Earth's a vacation for the great ones. Welcome to Namaste Nation, take one. When a soul was stirred, the nation got blurred in a word that's love and a verse that's Namaste. Oh, Namaste Nation, Namaste baby, Namaste once, Namaste.